Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Hillary Clinton is on a mission to Burma this week, mission to Myanmar, as it's been renamed, the first U.S. Secretary of State to visit the country in over 50 years. President Obama has said he's seen flickers of political progress in a country long ruled by military junta. Nobel Peace Prize winner and leading Burmese dissident Aung San Suu Kyi is out from house arrest and ready to run in elections. At the same time, Myanmar's rising strategic importance has not gone unnoticed by the U.S. and certainly not by China. After decades of seclusion, the country may be emerging as Asia's highly strategic new hinge. This hour on Point, mission to Burma. You can join the conversation. Can you see it on the map between China, India, and the sea? Is it time for the U.S. to re-engage Myanmar? Is China right to charge encirclement? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Hillary Clinton in the region as we speak, headed to Myanmar, a big precedent-setting visit. She arrives tomorrow. On September 15th, Clinton spoke to reporters about Myanmar during talks in San Francisco with Defense Secretary Panetta and the Australian Foreign and Defense Ministers about issues in the Asia-Pacific. She spoke of problems remaining in Myanmar, but also of openings, not least with Myanmar's dissident opposition leader, Aung San Suu Kyi.
Frankly, we have serious questions and concerns across a wide range of issues, from Burma's treatment of ethnic minorities and more than 2,000 political prisoners to its relations with North Korea. Still, we welcome the fact that the Burmese government has launched a dialogue with Aung San Suu Kyi and begun to speak of the need for important reforms.
Let's look at this visit and what it may mean. Joining me first today from Busan, South Korea, is Andrew Quinn, foreign policy correspondent for Reuters. He's traveling with Secretary of State Clinton, who flies tomorrow into Rangoon. Andrew Quinn, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
What is the dynamic that has taken, this Secretary of State on the path to Burma for the first time in nearly half a century for such an American official to arrive, Andrew?
Well, I think that this has been, things have been moving very rapidly. The Obama administration in 2009 began a sort of tentative outreach to Burma to see if they were willing to engage. And for the first year or so, really didn't see much progress. But in recent months, the new government that was put in place after elections in November really has started rolling out all kinds of reforms, political reforms, labor laws. They're trying to engage in peace talks with some of the ethnic minority groups. So I think that there's, on balance, a feeling that the reform movement may be genuine, and now's the time to test it out.
The U.S. seems to have been taking its lead very deliberately from the Burmese dissident leader who was for so many years under house arrest, Aung San Suu Kyi. Why are they keying in so specifically on her?
Well, Aung San Suu Kyi really has a status sort of paralleling Nelson Mandela as far as Burmese democracy activists go. So I think any foreign power is going to want to look to her to see what she thinks is going on with the new government. And President Obama spoke to her by phone before he made the decision to send Clinton. And this will give Clinton her first chance to meet Aung San Suu Kyi face to face and really get a personal readout from her on how she views the reform process underway in the government. So I think it's very important that they compare notes and sort of get on the same page.
Andrew, of course, President Obama was very recently in the Asia-Pacific region talking a lot about the U.S. being there to stay, as he said. How does this visit to Burma by Hillary Clinton fit into the bigger U.S. diplomatic initiative underway right now in the Asia-Pacific region?
Well, it's a very important part. I mean, of course, U.S. officials will tell you that it's not about China, but China does play a big role. The U.S. has been working very hard to strengthen its relations with a lot of countries around the perimeter of China, including India and Indonesia. And Burma, as you've stated, is a really central part of that puzzle. So if there's a chance to wean Burma away a bit from China's influence, I think the United States will be very happy to take that. Of course, Beijing may not be happy to see that happen, but we'll see how things go when we arrive in Burma on Wednesday.
You know, Andrew, for so many years, Burma, Myanmar, was sort of a hermit kingdom, almost like North Korea, cut off from much of the world, its rough politics, military junta in great seclusion. Why is it suddenly emerging as something more like a key strategic hinge point in this region?
Well, I think U.S. officials are still trying to parse out why the government is making these moves now. But I think one clear reason is that Myanmar's economy is in very, very bad shape, and it's sitting in the center of the most dynamic economic region in the world, if you look at Thailand, China, and elsewhere. But Myanmar remains very, very poor, and of course it's cut off from a lot of economic relations with the West world by sanctions. So I think that there's a hope that if they can get the reforms underway, and eventually, it won't happen soon, but eventually see some of these sanctions eased, that Myanmar could regain some of the luster that it had in the past. It was once one of the richest countries in Southeast Asia.
You mentioned China, of course. They've been very ambitious in investment in Myanmar and planning pipelines and highways. They had a big dam there planned that was just scrapped in recent months. Is the United States trying to, speaking of cutting off, is it trying to cut China off from Myanmar?
I don't think that that's the way they would describe it. I think that they see the China-Myanmar relationship as separate from the U.S.-Myanmar relationship, but it's far better to have a triangle than just a bilateral, so that if you can get the U.S. in there as a player, talking to the Burmese, that will begin to give a little bit of a counterweight to the Chinese influence, which, as you say, is enormous, both in the economic and political spheres.
Is she looking for commercial deals while she's in Myanmar, or is this just a, hello, we haven't seen each other for a long time visit?
Very much the latter. It's far too early to talk about commercial deals. I mean, aside from sanctions, Myanmar has a very undeveloped sort of commercial sector. There aren't guarantees for investment. There aren't guarantees for trade agreements. So any kind of economic payoff in this visit will be a long time down the road. What she's really doing is coming to talk to the leaders and get a gut sense herself of where they stand on reforms and whether or not this is really something that at this point is unstoppable.
Andrew Quinn, traveling with Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, joining us today from Busan, South Korea. Andrew, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
The last time we heard about politics out of Myanmar, out of Burma, was 2007. There was a big uprising there. You may remember Buddhist monks right in the middle of it, uprisings, riots all over the country. Al Jazeera reporter Tony Bertley in 2007 snuck recording equipment into Burma for a chance to interview those protesters. Here it is.
No democracy.
We struggle democracy. We want democracy.
Very, very dangerous government. You understand? Very, very dangerous government.
Very dangerous government. That uprising met with a violent response, many thrown in jail. Since then, a big change, or at least the form of a change, in Myanmar. Last month, opposition leader there, Aung San Suu Kyi, spoke with The Economist online about the progress that has been made.
The most important thing about our progress is that it should be sustainable. If you get to the point when you feel that the foundation is strong enough, I think you can be fairly sure that the institutions
would
go up.
Aung San Suu Kyi, after years in house arrest, now indicating that she's ready to run in parliamentary elections in Myanmar. Joining me now from Reykjavik, Iceland, is Thant Minh U, grandson of the famous Burmese Secretary General of the United Nations, U Thant. He's an historian who's also served on UN peacekeeping missions in Cambodia and the former Yugoslavia, spends much of his time now in Myanmar. His new book is Where China Meets India, Burma, and the New Crossroads of Asia. Thant Minh U, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Can you believe what's happening here? Suddenly, Myanmar, Burma, as you still call it, out of the shadows and right in the spotlight of international diplomacy. Why do you think this is happening?
Well, I suppose the pace of things is surprising. I think a year ago, no one would have expected this level of high-level diplomacy to be taking place in and around Burma. But in some ways, it's not too surprising, because I think over the last few years, we had seen signs that things were opening up, that the government or the old military junta was about to give way to a new government, that the new government might be at least slightly more reformist. And also on the Washington side, signs since the beginning of the Obama administration that there was a realization that the old sort of sanctions policy wasn't working and that there was a desire to try something else. And I think it's the coming together of these two things, both Washington's realization of a need for a slightly more engagement-oriented approach and then the reforms taking place in Burma. I think these two things coming together has made possible the trip that's taking place by Secretary Clinton this week.
You look at Burma on the map and with its place in history and say, you know, if this opening up continues, this could be what you call it, a game changer for all of Asia. What is it about Burma, its location, and its potential that makes you see it as potentially such a game-changing, emergent player here?
Well, it's very interesting because it's not really, you know, sort of the map. It's the map as it is now, which is actually a very new map. I mean, Burma, as you had mentioned earlier, had been for a very long time a very isolated place. For centuries, it was connected to some extent to other countries in Asia, but not very much. And certainly over the last many decades, it's been relatively isolated. But Burma, and not just Burma, but the places adjacent to Burma in what is today India and China, but what were for centuries different kingdoms, independent kingdoms, were what had separated India and China from each other. And if you think of India and China's civilizations, they're completely different civilizations in language, culture, everything else. And Burma and the mountains and the jungles around it had always been this great barrier between these two huge civilizations. But today, those barriers are coming down. And so the map is being remade in a very fundamental way. And if Burma opens up and it becomes this crossroads, as I think it will, it means essentially that India and China will be connected to each other as never before in 2,000 years of history. It's a very, very important geographical shift that's taking place right now or over these few years.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Hillary Clinton on the road to Burma, Myanmar, and the new strategic calculus, China, India, USA, in Southeast Asia. My guest is Thant Minh U. He's author of the new book, Where China Meets India, Burma and the New Crossroads of Asia, grandson of the Secretary General of the United Nations, U Thant, back in the day. Spends a lot of his time in Burma these days and writing about its potentially central new role in kind of reshaping the flow of trade and cultural interaction in a booming region of the world. Of course, Burma, long a British colony. Aung San Suu Kyi's father, a key figure, a revolutionary in fighting for independence there. Here's tape of him. This is January 1947, 6 months before his assassination by rivals in Burma. The revolutionary general Aung San visited with Prime Minister Clement Attlee in London to sign an order for Burmese independence.
My colleagues and I have come to London in response to the invitation of His Majesty's government in order to discuss the constitutional questions of Burma. The demand of our people is complete independence.
Complete independence. And they had it, but by 1962, it was into military rule and many, many years of very tough government. Internal civil wars nearly against ethnic minorities, economic stagnation. It has been a very rough time. Here's President Obama looking at the new leaf maybe turning over in Myanmar, speaking at the Asia-Pacific Summit in Indonesia. This was November 18th. President Obama said Burma is taking steps toward reform.
After years of darkness, we've seen flickers of progress in these last several weeks. President Thein Sein and the Burmese parliament have taken important steps on the path toward reform. A dialogue between the government and Aung San Suu Kyi has begun. The government has released some political prisoners. Media restrictions have been relaxed. And legislation has been approved that could open the political environment. So taken together, these are the most important steps toward reform in Burma that we've seen in years.
The American president giving pretty high praise there to what's still a tentative era of reform in Myanmar. Thant Minh U is with us. His book is Where China Meets India, Burma and the New Crossroads of Asia. Thant Minh U, I want to look very up to date at all of China's plans there, what's come to fruition, what hasn't, what's been blocked recently. But take us back in history. It's been, you remind us that for ages now, China has been really curious to know if there was some way, apart from its eastern face onto the Pacific, some way to go south and west to find a kind of California, if I may, in Myanmar. This goes way back thousands of years, Thanh Minh U.
Yes, absolutely. It was actually more than 2,000 years ago when the Han dynasty at the time sort of discovered that there was a place called India and that there were lands to the far southwest when China was actually a much smaller place than it is today. They sent their first explorers towards what is today Burma to see if they could find a southwest passage to India and to the sea. And they were foiled in their attempt. And since that time, over 20 centuries, there has been a steady movement of the Chinese frontier, the Chinese cultural frontier, political frontier, by successive Chinese empires towards Burma. And it's really only in the 20th century that China, that the Chinese state has gained control over what is today the Burma-China border area. There is a province in southwest China, Yunnan, with about 40 million people, which has come under Chinese rule only in the last couple of hundred years. So this Chinese frontier, where it is today, is very new. And it's from that frontier now that China is expanding its influence towards Burma and across Burma to the sea.
And of course, this is filled with promise, potentially peril, but this puts, I mean, we have to remember, on Burma's western border, you have India rising power. Now on its northern border, you have China. And of course, between China and the sea, it has its eastern seacoast. But here's another big, important outlet to the sea, Myanmar. Describe for us, if you would, the topography, Thanh Minh U, between China and the sea, between China and India through Myanmar. Why has it been such a kind of geographic obstacle for all these centuries?
I mean, I guess one way of thinking about China is like a series of giant steps. And if you look at the coast of China, where most of the big cities are, Beijing, Shanghai, where Hong Kong is as well, is quite flat and along the coast. And it steadily goes up and up, step by step, until you get to the Tibetan Plateau, which is incredibly high. And in this southwest corner, it's not as high as Tibet, but it's still quite high, it's quite mountainous. And to get across from the big cities along the Yangtze River in China to Burma, you have to cross over, and you had to historically spend, you know, weeks and months crossing over one mountain range after another. There are huge mountains and very, very deep gorges and valleys, as well as in the past jungles filled with tigers and all kinds of dangerous animals. So it was a very difficult terrain to cross, and that's why you had relatively very little contact or trade between China and Burma until the 20th century.
It was crossed at great cost in human life, not least in World War II with the Burma Road and General Stilwell. But you write, you paint a picture now of booming India and booming China bringing advanced technology, advanced economics right up to the borders of Burma and areas that were impassable and impoverished and sometimes still are very recently.
Yeah, I mean, a few things have happened. One is that China is politically now in control of that frontier. The second is that the populations have increased so much, so that these areas, which were very sparsely populated in the past, I mean, we're talking about an area several times the size of France altogether, that were very, very sparsely populated, have now filled out with people and towns and cities. And second, we now have or countries now have the engineering capability to build roads and tunnels and bridges across what was a very inhospitable terrain before. And so this is making possible, for the first time ever, the kind of linkages and the kinds of contacts that weren't possible before. It was possible to some extent during World War II with the Burma Road, but that was incredibly difficult. And then the road fell into disuse quite quickly after World War II.
You're suggesting a picture now where, I don't know, maybe not too many years down the road, somebody might hop on a superhighway in Yunnan, drive all night, and the next day or a couple days later be in Calcutta.
Well, it's actually almost, I mean, some of that is already happening. I was on the coast in Burma not long ago, a few months ago, and, you know, there are trucks hauling seafood, essentially, from the Burmese coast straight to China. It's now a 24-hour drive. There are roads. But these roads are set to improve into big multi-lane highways. The Chinese have just pledged to invest $23 billion in a high-speed rail that will connect, ultimately, the Burmese coast to Shanghai. Not just ultimately, but within a few years' time, according to their timetable. They're also building all manner of other infrastructure, from telecoms to hydropower to big dams to everything else. And this will bring China in contact with an area that's right up on both India's border, but also on the border of Bangladesh, which is a country which we haven't mentioned, but is 150 million people right next to Burma as well.
What would it mean economically, culturally, politically, if China and India, after eons of topographical separation, were suddenly kind of economically and culturally linked through Myanmar. What would that mean for the countries, for the region?
Well, for the region, it would be an enormous thing. And for Burma, it will mean everything, essentially. I mean, either it could be a very bad thing in the sense that Burma becomes a source of friction and competition, and it comes under the shadow of one country or another, and that Burma doesn't get its act together in terms of its government and so becomes a source of refugees and continued armed conflict and everything else. Or the reverse, that Burma actually becomes a much better country, much better governed country, democracy, in some way at least, with good economic policies, and it could become this bridge, this crossroads between the two biggest growing economies in the world, and that would be fantastic for Burma, but I think it would be a very good thing for India and China. In that better scenario, I think we would see this incredible coming together of Indian and Chinese cultural influences as well, and I think this could be something very important, perhaps not in the next several years, but in the decades to come.
China's been moving very aggressively already. Describe for us the panoply of pipeline, highways, seaport, dams that are either on the drawing boards or already being built or built in Myanmar with Chinese capital.
Well, the Burmese opening really began 20 years ago when the junta at the time wanted to open up to the rest of the world. Western sanctions were imposed 20 years ago or began to be imposed in response to human rights abuses. So China sort of filled that vacuum. It began to build roads. It began to build bridges across many of the rivers that are in that area. It's begun to build huge dams. You had mentioned that work on the biggest dam has been suspended by this new government, but there's work continuing on other dams, and there are many smaller dams that have been built. The Chinese are also building two massive oil and gas pipelines. One of the key reasons that Burma is important for China are these pipelines. China wants a strategic hedge around the Straits of Malacca, where more than 80% of its oil currently flows from the Middle East and Africa to China. So this pipeline would circumvent the Straits of Malacca and allow China to have this backdoor access to the sea and for oil from the Middle East and from Africa to come from that pipeline to southwest China. So these pipelines are meant to be completed in about 2 years' time. One is this oil pipeline. The other is a gas pipeline, which will allow natural gas offshore from Burma to go to China. And the most recent big project that's been agreed to are these high-speed rail lines due to be complete, I think, in 2016, which will connect both the deep seaport that will be built for the pipeline and the main Burmese city of Rangoon to Yunnan, the province in southwest China, to Chongqing, which is a mega city on the Yangtze, and then ultimately to Shanghai and Beijing as well.
That is kind of amazing to think. I mean, 2016 is just around the corner. High-speed rail connections right across Myanmar, unlocking China's interior economically, and of course that is a very big and populous interior for what natural resources in, Chinese products out, and all kinds of flow to go along with that. The dam suspension is important. What does that signify? After all these years of Chinese development, here was Burma, Myanmar, putting its foot down when it came to this dam. Why did that happen?
Well, I think the Chinese are also trying to figure that out. I mean, the dam is the biggest of many. It was especially controversial because it was a dam that was being built at the source of the Irrawaddy River, which is the main river in Burma, and there was a lot of concern that a dam being built where it was going to have massive environmental or damaging environmental effects downwater for tens of millions of Burmese people who lived further downstream. It was being built in an area that was inhabited by an ethnic minority people, the Kachin, who were very unhappy about that. It was going to flood an enormous area and displace tens of thousands of people. And there is in Burma, despite the repression, there has been the growth over the past few years of a not insignificant environmental movement as well. And so there was a sort of head of steam building up on this issue. And when the new government took power and opened up the political space just that much, this became an important issue that people talked about, that the media was reporting on. And I think more than anything else, the new government and the new president wanted to show that this was a government that was listening to popular opinion. So the dam project hasn't been scrapped, but it's been suspended for at least the tenure of this government the next 4 years.
A space opening between China and Myanmar after many years of cooperation, and suddenly here comes Hillary Clinton. Thant Minh U is with us. His new book is Where China Meets India, Burma, and the New Crossroads of Asia. Thant Minh U, let me go to our listeners, Justin in Montgomery, Alabama. Justin, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you know, sir?
Basically,
yes, what do you know?
Well, I went to Burma in January of 2007 as a college student looking at the government, and I was amazed at the Orwellian nature of the government there. Emma Larkin's book, Finding Orwell in Burma, shed a lot of light on that and helped me to be able to see it so far as the signs and the previews before TV shows and movies that say the people's desires and list these sort of mandates about exposing internal threats to the government and crushing external threats or coups. And there was so much fear there in the country. And then added to that, there is the issue of the human rights violations. We met with an organization, the Thailand-Burma Border Consortium, which keeps track of a lot of the refugees there, the ethnic minority groups, and there is a very diverse population. I think it's close to 100 different ethnic minorities, and I think that we need to see more evidence of the reformed government taking steps to improve those relations so far as not having the remnants of the oppressive military junta still as apparent, not having the same fears and not having the same threats. If you think back to when the tsunami hit several years ago, mm-hmm. there were issues with the government not allowing in aid and international aid organizations.
Yeah, the history has been pretty gruesome, and gruesome quite recently. I appreciate your call, Justin. Thatmadu, what about it? I mean, we've got this sudden turnover, this sudden new face, but Justin points out the sort of litany of repression, Orwellian government, ethnic repression that we've seen for years and years in Myanmar. You know, are we naive to think that that strong military hand and rule and even repression is really gone or going away? Is that naive?
Well, it's certainly not gone. And I think one has to make a distinction between two things. One is the new government in terms of what it seems to be trying to do and the things that it has done over the past several months, which includes freeing up the media to some extent, lifting all restrictions on the internet, a whole bunch of new laws that have been passed in parliament allowing for free trade unions to form for the first time, allowing protest for the first time, moves towards economic reform, the dialogue with Aung San Suu Kyi, releasing hundreds of political prisoners, all of these things. And, you know, if you go to Rangoon, and I was just there last week, there is a very, very different mood there now than there was in 2007. Now, against that, what you have is, you know, a system that has been in place and has grown up over decades. And as Justin just mentioned, I mean, there is still armed conflict in parts of the country. There is a long history and the effects of decades of brutal armed conflict in parts of the country. You have the same institutions of government that have been around for a long time, some of which have become very corrupt over the past few decades. Some of these things will be incredibly difficult to change, even with will at the top. They may take years, if not decades. I think so. One has to make a distinction between what the new government, can do and assessing whether or not there's a will to change versus the actual situation, which I think will take a very long time to reverse. I mean, because essentially we're trying to reverse half a century of bad government and military government in Burma.
We've just got a few seconds before the break, but in brief, do U.S. sanctions on Myanmar, Burma matter when China is so ready and willing to invest at a mega scale?
Yeah, it matters a huge amount because the sanctions and the boycotts and essentially have allowed China a clear playing field for 20 years. So it's increased China's economic influence in the country. It also means, because it's very difficult to do business, both because of government policies and because of sanctions, it means that the companies that are most likely to go in are the companies that are going to go in for a quick profit or the companies that are going in simply to extract natural resources. And Burma has lacked the kind of investment that can create jobs and things for ordinary people. And that needs to be reversed, even if we want to make political reform sustainable going forward.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Hillary Clinton on the road to Burma, Myanmar, and the new strategic calculus, China, India, USA, in Southeast Asia. Thant Minh U is with us, grandson of the UN Secretary General U Thant back decades ago now, spends a lot of his time in Burma, is out with a new book, Where China Meets India, Burma and the New Crossroads of Asia, looking at everything China's been pouring in there in terms of infrastructure, looking in effect to make Burma its California, its other coast. Now Hillary Clinton is coming in a moment where President Obama talks about flickers of hope in terms of political reform there. In a moment, David Steinberg at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University joins us as well. But let's get a call right here from Doug in Newton, Massachusetts. Doug, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call.
Yes.
I just wanted to share with you the fact that my family and I spent a couple of weeks in Myanmar earlier this year. And for that couple of weeks, we were accompanied by a guide who was a former revolutionary fighter who was imprisoned and fought against the government for almost 10 years in the black areas, which is something that Mr. Yu could speak of. And he shared with us, as we got to know him throughout the couple of weeks, and the more we got to know him, he shared with us the fact that he wanted us to go back to our country and tell our people and tell our government to engage with the Myanmar government, and to do exactly what Hillary Clinton and President Obama are now doing, because he thought that that was the best way to institute change as opposed to alienating or continuing to have a standoff relationship with the government.
We'll look at that.
One other thing.
Yes, yes, please.
As Mr. Yu will confirm, it is the most magnificent country I have ever traveled to, and would encourage any American to visit it.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask, Doug. You've just been there. Paint a picture for us of what you found most striking in your visit just this year to Myanmar, Burma.
It is untouched. The people are incredibly tranquil and friendly and welcoming. It is, as one who's traveled throughout the world, by far my favorite country that I have been to. The indigenous people are so loving and acceptant of foreigners. It is untouched by civilization in so many areas, and the natural beauty is unparalleled.
The government has a pretty long reach there. Are you sure that your guide was not instructed to ask you for the U.S. to drop sanctions?
Absolutely. This did not come in short order. This was over many, many, many nights of sitting around and drinking beer and talking,
yeah,
getting to know each other. He eventually loosened up and shared with us his history of being a former freedom fighter and having been imprisoned. It did not come immediately. He's a very sophisticated, very well-educated fellow who strongly believes that we should be engaging rather than alienating.
Doug, I appreciate your call very much. The first-hand account there. And, of course, yes, a beautiful part of the world. I know it well. And, of course, at the same time, when you say untouched, well, a big part of that is a lack of any economic development to speak of, a lot of poverty there, and, of course, over the years, repression. But there's one voice saying, deal with us, please, United States. Let's get another perspective on this. David Steinberg joins us now from Washington, D.C., professor at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University, long-time expert on Myanmar and U.S. policy in Asia. His new book, Modern China-Myanmar Relations, Dilemmas of Mutual Dependence, will be out next year. David Steinberg, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
There's a listener just back this year from Myanmar reporting on one Burmese citizen saying, United States, please open up to Myanmar. Do you think it's time? Do you think it's a good idea, David Steinberg, for the opening that's being made right now?
I think it's an excellent idea, and I am delighted the administration, the Obama administration, changed its policy from the Clinton and Bush administrations, which was regime change.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, get out of power, saying this to the military, and then we'll talk to you. That was a non sequitur, of course. The Obama administration says we have to keep the sanctions because politically in the United States they're very difficult to get rid of, but we will have engagement, and they have been engaged at a high level, and Hillary Clinton is the acme of that engagement.
Do you see this as first and foremost throwing a little sand in China's gears here, keeping Myanmar from becoming a sort of a Chinese province practically with all the Chinese development going on there, or something else, David Steinberg?
I think that that was not the original intent. I think China does interpret it that way. They believe that every move that the United States makes in East Asia, whether it's the South China Sea or in Myanmar, are designed to contain China. That was our policy in the 50s and 60s during the Cold War. I don't believe it's strictly our policy today. Now, we have other, I think, important interests, and we couldn't move before, I think, because of the nature of the junta that ran the country. The head of that junta, General Than Shwe, basically made decisions by himself, and he disliked very much Aung San Suu Kyi and really had no relations with her. And when the new government came in, even though they are largely former military, they have taken a very pragmatic approach, which I think is desirable.
So if the U.S. gets more engaged, if Myanmar opens up more, reforms more, engages more with India, Washington, maybe others, do you see this emerging, David Steinberg, as a new kind of great transit point, a kind of hinge of the region, bringing economies and cultures together? Or do you see it as a contested point of economic and political influence between big powers?
I think it's probably both. China needs Myanmar for just the reasons that Thamanu mentioned, access to the Bay of Bengal, and the pipelines, the access to energy that doesn't go through the Malacca Straits, the hydroelectric power. China's invested in dozens of dams in Burma, and also mining and timber, many other factors. Also, Burma, with a market of maybe 59 million people officially, is important, and there may be as many as 2 million illegal Chinese immigrants in that country that are taking economic advantage of the situation.
Wow.
Also, the issue then is that India is concerned about this for two reasons. One, its most volatile area, the northeast India, is on the China-Burma border, and that area has been plagued by rebellions for a long time. Mm-hmm. They want to pacify that area. Secondly, they feel that they are surrounded by China, with Pakistan as an ally of China, China to their north, and Myanmar, let's say, penetrated to the east. They feel potentially threatened.
Why do you think, David Steinberg, that Myanmar is making these steps, apparently, toward political reform now? Is it in order to be able to open up to countries other than China, to balance the big power sort of interests that are swirling in their country? Is it something indigenous? Is there something happened internally? I mean, they were so determined for so many years to keep that military iron rule. Why this now?
Well, military rule is still there, but I think the changes are terribly important for a variety of reasons. One is Burma has always had, since independence, a neutralist policy. They're very, very nationalistic, very independent. They don't want to be in anybody's pocket, whether the United States, China, or anywhere else. So the Chinese influence has been enormous. There is no question about that. But then they tried to seek Indian influence, Indian aid. The Japanese are likely to go back in with their aid program, which was terribly important. And Japan also wants to counter China in Myanmar as well. And the openings to the United States are another aspect of this independence. Also, with the new government, which is largely composed of military men, still doesn't have that single authority that General Than Shwe had earlier, where he was able to pay fiat, basically, to control the country. It's more diverse, even within a broad political military setup.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, David.
I just wanted to say that we have in Burma military government in civilianized form or direct rule since 1962.
Mm-hmm.
The military, I believe, want to control certain basic elements of that society. They want national unity. That's a primary objective, national sovereignty, and the autonomy of the military within the Burmese government. And as long as they have that, I think that then it will allow these reforms to take place. But there are strong elements in the military who don't want these reforms. And by sending Secretary Clinton, we are, in fact, helping those who want reforms, because we'll make rescinding those reforms more difficult in the future should they want to do that.
Bolstering reformers in Myanmar with her visit right now. Thought Minu, let me read to you from one of our listeners a thoughtful message here online. This is from Dan. He says, the strategy of engagement with formerly and in some cases still repressive regimes in Southeast Asia by the United States is a direct response, Dan writes, to China's increasing assertiveness in the region. everything from Secretary Clinton's visit to Myanmar, high-level engagement with Vietnam, war games with South Korea, Marines in Australia, right down to Obama's declaration that America is a Pacific nation, all that intended to hem in China, Dan writes, and prevent it from expanding its influence. He says he generally supports this, but he's worried that such bold-faced action may be seen as far more provocative than intended by China. What do you say, Thant Minh Tu?
Well, I think it's right in the sense that, as David had just mentioned, that the Chinese probably perceive Secretary Clinton's visit and many other things the U.S. is trying to do to engage the new government as part of a sort of grand strategy to hem them in. I think the reality is slightly different for the reasons that David has already mentioned. I mean, I think that as Asia becomes more important, I think America wants to have or make sure that many countries in the region, including Burma, but other countries like Vietnam as well, have the opportunity for a more balanced set of relationships, that it's good for the United States, for Burma not to be just in China's pocket, but not to be in the U.S. pocket either, and to have the opportunity to have a normal set of international relations. And, you know, I think we have to be clear that we're still a very, very far from Burma having the kind of relationship with the United States that, say, the U.S. has with Pakistan or Egypt under Mubarak or Indonesia under Suharto. I mean, there are sanctions in place, some of the toughest economic sanctions in the world. There's barely any U.S. business or other sort of presence on the ground, whereas the Chinese presence is enormous. So I think it's Hillary Clinton's visit could be about, you know, moving the U.S. a little bit closer to re-engaging in the country. I don't think anyone expects the U.S. to move towards the kind of relationship it has with many other authoritarian governments or has had in the past in the region.
Let's get a call here from Lancaster, South Carolina, and Isaac. Hi, Isaac. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
Well, what do you think?
I'm very concerned about the people and the country in itself of Burma and Myanmar. It seems in a great way the focus of this talk is how the expansion and the opening up of their economy and their country, the removal of sanctions, you know, the U.S. possibly intervening is going to benefit more the U.S., China, and India. Essentially, I see that Burma is doomed to be either in someone's pocket, whether it be India, China, or the U.S. And frankly, I'm even more concerned about China and India's involvement, being that these two countries and how they've expanded their economies and how they've expanded their infrastructures and technologies and industry have done it with no care and no respect to the environment, have polluted their rivers, have polluted their cities, have polluted their air. And who's to say that they're not going to come in and decimate all that is the beauty of Burma and Myanmar? You know, we heard a caller earlier speaking about how untouched and pristine it'll be, and that will now all be, pipelines and dams with no respect to the sedimentation and the destruction of wildlife.
Yeah, and all the rest. We can only imagine the scale at which that could happen. David Steinberg, speak to this. Does Myanmar just get run over in this new era as it opens up, or something else?
Something else, I hope, and we all hope, and that is the lives of the Burmese people have to be improved. Thant Minh Tu mentioned that it was, and you mentioned, I believe, that it was supposed to be a rich country, and it was supposed to be the richest country in Southeast Asia at one time.
By its resources.
By its resources, by its well-educated population, by its parliamentary government, and it's partially populated country at that time. Now it is the poorest country. One quarter of the population, they say, lower poverty line. Another quarter of the population at the poverty line. So inflation hurts half the population. If you go back to some of the towns in Burma, they haven't changed since I first went there in 1958.
Wow.
Except maybe for a few battery-powered television sets. Things are the educational system has been decimated. The health system is the second poorest in the world. But the government now has, for the first time, the president has had a poverty seminar, where he has admitted the poverty, admitted the problems of education and health, admitted the problems of corruption. This has never happened in a half century. Now, for the officials to admit those are the problems, to start to deal with them, this is very, very important. Now, there are strong elements within the military who don't want to see this succeed, want an old system. But I think what we have done is a very sound move of trying to build up those who are interested in reform. The Burmese government, the president's office, filed an op-ed with the Washington Post several weeks ago, really calling for U.S. aid and calling for support in this era of reform. And I think the U.S. has responded very, very well.
You know, Thatmindu, I'm looking here at a report in The Guardian that just recently they in Burma they discovered two very rare white elephants. Now, that's not a good thing in the West, but in Burma that means a harbinger of prosperity and good fortune, I'm reading here. And the government just went to town on that. A big reception, big speeches, the state media reporting that this was undoubtedly kind of an omen reflecting on improvement in the country's foreign relations. You spend a lot of time in Myanmar, Thatmindu. What's the mood there? Are ordinary Burmese aware that the country's got a shift going on, that it's opening up more? What's the atmosphere?
No, I think if you're in Naypyidaw, the capital, there's an awareness of all the changes going on, and there's some excitement about it. I think in Rangoon, amongst the political class, thousands of journalists, NGO heads, politicians, others, I think there are mixed views, but I think in general, people are more optimistic than they were before. I think if you go into the ordinary villages, people are untouched by the changes so far. I mean, the changes that need to take place will take a long time in the making, and their lives haven't changed in any meaningful way over just these past few months. But I think the last call was exactly right. I think if Burma is opening up anyway, it's opening up to China, there's going to be trade from other countries as well, this will not be to the advantage of ordinary Burmese people unless we can build up the regulatory frameworks, the institutions, to manage all these links to the benefit of ordinary people. And I think one thing that Hillary Clinton, it would be very good if Secretary Clinton was able to do, was to look carefully at how to support the building up of new institutions that can help Burma open up in exactly the right way to China, to India, to the U.S., and to everyone else.
It is a gorgeous country that has had a rough history. It would be great if it could become a kind of model for how to do it at this very Central Asian point in this era. Thatmindu, author of Where China Meets India, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
David Steinberg at Georgetown University, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.